The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media, this is 91.3 KUAF, and this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 11th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, a new alliance for the World Trade Center, Arkansas, and the U.S. Small Business Administration. We'll explore what the new partnership might mean for the state. This afternoon, following Ozarks at Large on NPR's Here and Now, California is now a so-called sanctuary state. The state doesn't help the federal government with immigration enforcement. Some cities are happy about that, but other cities are suing the state. A look at the debate on Here and Now beginning at 1 this afternoon on 91.3. And tonight, the Fayetteville Public Education Foundation will honor four individuals who have made their communities better at the annual Hall of Honor introduction ceremony at the Fayetteville Town Center. Faye Jones, Peggy Taylor Lewis, Dr. James Hunt, and the late George Spencer will be celebrated tonight. The reception begins at 5:30, the dinner at 6:30, and the ceremony at 7:30. You can find out more at fayeddfoundation.org. If you haven't registered to vote yet in Arkansas, you're out of luck, at least as far as the 2018 elections go. The voter registration deadline was Tuesday. Now, county clerks and local organizations are looking ahead to early voting in the midterms, and that begins in under 2 weeks. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek has more on voter registration turnout and how election officials and nonprofits are preparing to get people to the polls.
At the Benton County Clerk's Office, Chief Deputy County Clerk Betsy Harrell takes a break from sorting through voter applications from the last day of voter registration.
We've got probably 200 applications in a stack, and some of those, of course, are address changes, transfers from other counties. Quite a few of them we will find are new.
Harrell says the county clerk's office stayed open an extra 2.5 hours Tuesday to give Benton County residents until 7 to get their registrations in.
We were happy to do it. We got about 85 more people, and looking forward to it, we were kind of like, ooh, it's going to be really embarrassing if nobody shows up. And I said, you know, if we get one person in to register that wouldn't have registered otherwise, it would be worth it.
According to Harrell, between August 1st and October 9th, the county clerk's office processed nearly 3,200 new voter applications, compared to the roughly 1,600 they processed in that same time period before the last midterm election in 2014. And the number of applications received this year is likely to go up because they're still processing paperwork. Harrell attributes part of the increase in new voters to Benton County's ever-growing population.
As a matter of fact, the very last registration I took was a gentleman who had moved here from Colorado. And I looked up to make sure he was not registered. And his whole family had gotten registered several months ago. And he came in about 10 minutes till 7. And I thought, I bet you would have been in trouble if you had gotten home and not gotten this in, because you'd have been the only one in the family that didn't get it done. So, it's just people moving here.
And Harrell adds, for the first time in a while, Bentonville residents have a whole field of potential mayoral candidates to choose from. That doesn't include current Mayor Bob McCaslin, who has held that position since 2007, but is not seeking re-election.
I think having a mayor's race in Bentonville is going to spark a little more interest in this area. There has, you know, the current mayor has been an incumbent for the last several cycles, so it's a wide open seat position, so there's always a lot of interest when there's a new position open.
Harrell says the Benton County Election Coordinator estimates there will be a 47% turnout once the election wraps up on November 6th.
And I'm not going to be surprised if it's higher just because of the interest in registration that we've seen in the last month.
At least part of that interest in voter registration could be attributed to Downtown Bentonville, Inc. and their new sign campaign called Bentonville Votes.
There was one that we put in a lot of restrooms that said, you're going to be here for a while, and it had a toilet roll, and then it said, you know, hashtag, it said register to vote, hashtag vote Bentonville, or Bentonville Votes. We have one over by Peddler's Pub. They're actually out taking them down now because it ended October 9th, but that said if your dog could vote, he would vote too. There's one out in the trails that says every climb doesn't have to be hard.
That's Marcy Ouellette, the Communications and Community Outreach Director for Downtown Bentonville, Inc. She says they also had a robust social media campaign and went out to meet potential new voters face-to-face at the farmers market.
There were 9 farmers markets that we had voter registration at. Some absolutely amazing volunteers came out, and they dedicated their mornings, whether it was hot or cold or rainy, taking in voter registrations.
Ouellette says they collected about 15 to 20 new voter applications every one of those Saturdays and were able to deliver about 150 applications to the county clerk's office. Downtown Bentonville also started a text-in number that people could use to check if they're registered and if their information is current. Ouellette says, as a nonprofit organization, Downtown Bentonville, Inc. has largely focused on community events. But the additional focus on awareness campaigns comes along with their new executive director, who started the job earlier this year.
We want everybody to vote. We want everybody to know what's going on, to be informed about the decisions that they are making. This is where, you know, we feel that we fit in really well, is because, you know, we want to engage everybody in the community. We want to bring them to our events. We want to bring them downtown to support the shops here, to support the farmers. So if you look at a holistic view of everything, that awareness is so very important on both sides.
But Ouellette says registering to vote is only the first step. Actually, voting has to come next.
We will be shifting our gears with Bentonville Votes going forward, doing more campaigning to get people to the polls and to vote. You'll see that in the form of some more quippy little posts, just encouraging people to go out to the polls.
Ouellette says they'll also continue running the Bentonville Votes social media pages, where they will share information about upcoming events, like the Mayoral Forum on October 17th.
So that's really huge. And, you know, we do have quite a few candidates running, so it's really important to know the differences between each candidate.
And just as in Benton County, Washington County Election Coordinator Jennifer Price says there are a lot of candidates on the ballots in general.
So actually, we have more contested races this year than I've ever seen on a ballot.
There's one federal race for House District 3, which is currently occupied by Representative Steve Womack. There are several state offices, including governor and attorney general. Most county offices are being contested, so are several city-level races. And then there are 5 state issues, although 4 of them are being challenged in court.
So that adds up to a very long ballot.
That's why Price says they're encouraging people to cast their votes during early voting from October 22nd to November 5th.
The ballot is longer this year than it was in 2016, so we anticipate that it'll actually take voters longer to cast their ballot. So it is important to early vote to avoid those long lines on election day.
Price also recommends making sure your voter information includes your current address and making any changes before showing up at the polling place so you don't have to wait for the poll workers to do it.
So anything like that that you can take care of beforehand is great. There's a wonderful website called voterview.org that you can look up your name, and it'll show your address. It'll show who you're eligible to vote for, and a sample ballot will be there as well.
And Price adds, as of right now, voters should prepare to bring a photo ID to vote.
So it would be an approved photo ID issued by the state of Arkansas, the federal government, or a post-secondary educational institution located in Arkansas.
So, for example, that could be a driver's license, a passport, or a student ID. A challenge to the voter ID law passed in 2017 is currently before the Arkansas Supreme Court. The justices heard oral arguments in the case last month, but have yet to issue a ruling. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
We also reached out to the Sebastian County Clerk's Office. They tell us so far they have processed nearly 1,100 new voter applications. By the way, there will be a forum for the candidates seeking the Bentonville mayor's office Wednesday night from 6 until 7:30 at the Bentonville Public Library. I'll be moderating the forum sponsored by the Greater Bentonville Chamber of Commerce, and there will be an opportunity for those attending to submit questions for the candidates. That forum is Wednesday night, beginning at 6 at the Bentonville Public Library. It is free and open to the public. Then the next night, the 18th, 1 week from tonight, there will be a forum for candidates running for Rogers City Council. That takes place at the Rogers City Hall from 6 to 8 a week from tonight. Rusty Turner, the editor of the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, will moderate that forum. Then, on October 24th, the candidates running for mayor in Bentonville are scheduled to gather together again for a Meet the Candidates event at the Bentonville Community Center. That takes place on October 24th and is sponsored by the Rotary Club of Bentonville. Early voting in Arkansas does begin October 22nd, and the early voting will last through the day before the traditional election day, and that traditional election day is Tuesday, November 6th. Finally, tomorrow afternoon on Science Friday on 91.3, voters are getting ready for midterm elections on November 6th, but are our voting systems ready? A look at the security of our voting infrastructure on Science Friday, tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3. KUAF.
Support for 91.3 and Arkansas Public Media come from Simmons Bank, with more than 90 community-based locations in Arkansas, providing banking and lending services. Dreams realized. SimmonsBank.com for more. Additional support comes from Malco Cinemas and Grills, located in Rogers, Springdale, Fort Smith, and the Razorback Cinema Grill and IMAX in Fayetteville. Malco Theaters offer the gift of entertainment all year around for all occasions. Malco gift cards available at all locations and online. Malco.com.
Still to come this hour, how technology might help Arkansas become a blue zone.
The areas in the world where people live longer lives and happier lives. So the Buettners went and toured the world and started looking at the things, the characteristics, the data that would make it where people are in a blue zone. And so now they're coming to speak and also be a part of the day to talk about how Arkansas could become a blue zone.
A preview of this month's MedTech, Women in Tech, and Northwest Arkansas Technology Summit events is ahead on the show as part of this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. The latest class to be selected to the Arkansas Business Hall of Fame includes a strong Northwest Arkansas connection. John W. Tyson, the founder and former CEO of Tyson Foods, is one of the four to be newly named to the Hall of Fame. Also on the 2019 list, Joe M. Steele, founder of the Springdale Canning Company and Steele Canning Company, Claiborne P. Deming, the current chair of the board at Murphy Oil, and Warren Stevens, chairman, president, and CEO of Stevens Incorporated. The induction ceremony is scheduled for Friday, February 8th in Little Rock. The Arkansas Business Hall of Fame is permanently located inside the Donald W. Reynolds Center for Enterprise Development at the Walton College on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. 9 years ago, the De La Rosa family was divided by immigration law. Now, the U.S. government is giving them 30 days to be together, to say a final goodbye to a dying husband and father.
Even though it's annoying when she wakes me up because I'm so tired, it's fun to wake up to her. It's nice.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Latino USA, Saturday afternoon at 3 on 91.3. The Wild and Scenic Film Festival is an environmental and adventure film festival. It's produced by the South Yuba River Citizens League, a watershed advocacy group that was started in 1983 to fight against proposed dams. The festival's name is a celebration of achieving wild and scenic status in 1999 for 39 miles of the South Yuba River in California. The group began the festival in 2003, and since, it's expanded to include a tour, which takes the festival's films to communities around the country. This month, the festival will be hosted by Pack Rat Outdoor Center at the Fayetteville Town Center. Emily Dixon, Pack Rat's community events coordinator, came to Studio 123 recently to tell Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda more about the event.
The Wild and Scenic Film Festival is environmentally focused. It is hosted nationwide. It's primarily focused on environmental issues or outdoor exploration. I mean, it covers a wide range of topics. This year we're going to have films taking you all the way from Alaska down to the Rio Grande, out to the East Coast, West Coast, all over the nation. And its primary mission is really just to bring people together, bring the community together, and make individuals in the community be inspired to be active participants in the preservation of our natural spaces and see what's out there and feel connected to Mother Nature and the outdoors a bit more in their day-to-day life.
And this is the first time it's coming to Arkansas, but the festival has been around for a while.
Yeah, so the festival nationwide has been around for 16 years. So I saw the opportunity to introduce a new event to not just the Northwest Arkansas Corner, but to Arkansas as a whole. And I felt like it was really important for us to bring this because I think there's a bit of pride for us as Arkansans living in the natural state. I mean, we earned that title well. We're kind of a hidden gem, and the Wild and Scenic Film Festival is really highlighting those outdoor areas that are good for exploration and need protection. And we're actually coming up, this year is the 50th anniversary of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. So we felt it was important for us for the festival to partner up with a nonprofit who really emphasizes the protection of our very own Wild and Scenic River. So we're actually, partnering up with the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance to kind of solidify and highlight that anniversary for that act coming up. So
money raised from the festival would go back to them?
Yeah, proceeds. We're doing $10 from each ticket is going to go directly to the BRWA. And the tickets are only $15. And what you're getting with that is beyond just the films. I just finished the film program, which is, I'm so excited for the lineup. We've got 11 films, and those are the shortest ones at 3 minutes, and the longest ones just over 20. But we're going to have films. I'm trying to get some live music. We'll have like a pre-event reception, mm-hmm. and there will be music, and there will be beer, and there will be like kettle corn snacks and vendors to talk to and giveaways to get entered into. And we'll have some photography from some of our own staffers who have traveled to amazing places and some photography from another local media company, Black Elk. They're going to post some photography photos of from just their adventures and their explorations. So there will be art and music and beer and just community gathering before the films even start and an opportunity to talk with the nonprofit and some of our vendors. So it is focused on the films, which we've selected JTH Productions to do our film stuff. I'm really excited about using them because what's important for me is that the quality of the film festival is theater quality, and being hosted in the town center, it's going to take a little bit of transformation, but the focus is definitely on the films, but there's going to be so many other layers to it that I'm really excited about.
Are all of the films documentaries or some of them narrative films?
They're all documentaries, yeah. So the diversity within the films varies from lighthearted quirkiness to, two guys out climbing in Alaska talking about life to the protection of wildlife down near the Rio Grande to, strong women, indigenous voices in the outdoor industry. So there's kind of – they are all documentaries, but there's a diverse set of focuses within the film selections.
Is there one that you're particularly excited about? Because if I understand the way this works is – the bigger festival mm-hmm. has a selection of films that you can pick from, and then you get to curate it for your particular festival.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you got to watch a lot.
A lot. There is over 140 films to choose from, and it was a large task. and I, in my head, for some reason, I thought I could have, 20 films, but I wasn't wanting to make it a 3-hour film viewing, so 11 is where I stuck. I'm excited about all of them.
Okay.
I would say off the top of my head, the one that I watched and instantly knew that it would be a part of the film festival, there's more because I just relate with it. There's this really short film just with really cool women doing really cool things outdoors. They're base jumping and they're doing slackline over these huge canyons and they're mountain biking and snowboarding and they look so cool. And so I just really was captured by that and they put it behind some really good music too. So
okay. So definitely worth watching that one.
Yeah. It's definitely, I watched it and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to get into all these sports now and look at all these role models. And there's something like that in there for everyone.
So it's at the town center. So mm-hmm. I'm assuming there's one screen, and so you can just watch all of the films
mm-hmm. yes.
instead of having to pick and choose like you do at some film festivals.
Yeah. So since this is our very first year, we want to make it. We want to make the experience as available to everyone as possible. So there's just one viewing space. It's the tickets are limited. And we're going to have, again, that pre-event reception area. And then you kind of, like, walk through to the bigger room. And there's a giant screen. And we'll show them in succession.
Okay.
So there will be a first half of film viewing, which ends with the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance is going to have an opportunity to give a presentation right before the intermission so that you can get to know them and know what they're working to preserve and what their missions are. And then we'll go to intermission, and then there'll be a second half. And then that will be the conclusion of the night.
We mentioned that this is a fundraiser for the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance.
Yeah.
and that seems to be in line with the overall mission of the festival mm-hmm. as a whole, because mm-hmm. that's how it got started.
Yeah, the festival was started by a nonprofit out in Northern California, the South Yuba River Citizens League. And they were intending to raise funds to protect their own wild and scenic river. And so it spread like wildfire. The people over there, the flagship festival in Northern California brings in literal thousands of people. And so they're like, they really encourage, if nonprofits aren't running the event, they really encourage businesses to partner with a relevant nonprofit that they have a good relationship with. And the BRWA is someone we've worked with a gazillion times. So it really just made sense to have them here and have them have a face at this event.
And so the event is scheduled for October 24th at the yes. Fayetteville Town Center. What yes. time does it start?
So it'll start at 5, and films will start showing at 6, and then you'll go 6 to 7, 30-minute intermission, and then another hour, and then that'll be the conclusion.
And if people want more information or want to buy tickets, where's the best place to send them?
Yeah, so to buy tickets, there's a link on our Facebook event page. The tickets are only $15, so you get a take-home pint glass with that as well. So Clean Canteen will have some stainless steels that you'll get with your ticket, and there will be Sierra Nevada served, Fossil Cove beer served. We're looking at getting Crisis as well. But all that information, the best place to go is really the Facebook event page as far as continuous updates.
Emily, thank you so much for your time and best of luck with the new event.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Emily Dixon, Community Events Coordinator for Pack Rat Outdoor Center, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. They spoke at the Carver Center for Public Radio late last month. More information about the Wild and Scenic Film Festival is available at facebook.com/PackRatOutdoorCenter. Tomorrow night, the second annual Fine Times at Our House weekend launches on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville with music and dance. Then continues with dances, concerts, music, workshops, and more through Sunday, all devoted to the enjoyment and scholarship of old-time music. You can see the entire schedule and learn more about the weekend at nwacontra.org. Last month, 4 of the participants in the upcoming weekend came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. I asked them about learning new old songs. We'll hear responses from Aviva Stegmeyer, Joni Green, Steve Green, and Pete Howard, then hear a performance of a song that they learned from an old Doc Watson recording.
Are you guys just so musically inclined that it just takes sitting down for a few minutes and one singing for another, or do you have to harmonize together? How do you do it?
Some songs are easier than others. I think that we both listen to old music so much and have sung so much that some songs come really easy. And then other songs, there's challenging parts, and we have to play them over and over.
We learned a song called James Alley Blues that is an a cappella song and was pretty challenging, but one of our favorite songs, too.
As a spouse of a singer, I've been really fascinated to hear their voices just blend more and more as they learn each other. And their harmonies have really gotten fun for me. And I'm not a singer, but I can hear the changes.
Pete, is there something that you've picked up in the last year?
Well, I'm a fiddle player, and we're always trying to grab hold of new tunes. And I like to play a lot with Roy Pilgrim, who's Aviva's partner, and he and I learn each other's tunes quite often, or he'll point me at something that he's heard, and I'll do the same for him.
Aviva Stegmeier, guitar and vocals, Joni Green, vocals, and Pete Howard, fiddle, performing in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They'll all be part of the second annual Fine Times at Our House weekend that begins tomorrow night with a concert on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville, then continues through Sunday. A schedule of events and more information can be found at nwacontra.org. Think contra dancing. nwacontra.org.
91.3 is supported by Dog Party USA, hosting the 20th annual Halloween Costume Party, October 20th, 5:30 to 8 p.m. This celebration will include live music, food, games, both dog and owner costume contests, and more. Vaccinated and friendly dogs welcome. DogPartyUSA.com, Facebook, or 306-4660 for information. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, kicks off its 64th season November 3rd at Walton Arts Center. Maestro Paul Haas and SONA musicians present the season's first Masterworks concert, featuring Leonard Bernstein's three dance episodes from On the Town and Brahms Symphony No. 1. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
The Arkansas World Trade Center and the U.S. Small Business Administration are entering into a partnership to help small businesses in the natural state enter the global market. Edward Haddock, the director of the Small Business Administration's Arkansas District Office, says small businesses often struggle with resources. The goal of the Strategic Alliance Memorandum signed yesterday is to provide financial assistance
so business owners will consider looking at international opportunities.
When we look at international sales strategy, there's a lot of value that can come in for a small business. It could be to help smooth revenues under slow times here in the United States, and also look at the global opportunity of 98% of the world's customers are outside of the United States. So we need to help connect small businesses to those markets.
The financial assistance, Haddock says, will come in the form of a $150,000 state trade expansion program grant to the World Trade Center. Haddock says there are 240,000 small businesses in Arkansas, but only about 1,700 are trading internationally. The SBA and the World Trade Center both want to increase that number, and Haddock says providing educational resources will play a big role.
So it takes a little time to learn new cultures and the way of doing business in other countries. For our small businesses, they generally tend to attack the thing that's easiest for them. And this is more of an investment in their long-term sustainability when we look at international sales.
Haddock says the World Trade Center is looking to use the STEP grant to help small businesses that already have a good foundation and know how to do business, but need some guidance to diversify their market.
Part of the World Trade Center's options in using that is to reimburse a firm that may look at doing a trade show, or they could work with the United States Export Assistance Center and go on a Gold Key mission and have some of that refunded back to them through the grant. So it kind of defrays the cost to the small business after they've, of course, expensed it, after they've gone on their trade mission. This is a reimbursement grant that they could be eligible for.
Haddock says any small businesses interested in finding out more about the grant and possible trade opportunities should contact the World Trade Center. Every day we know a little bit more about what to expect with this year's version of The Unexpected. After revealing the roster of participating artists earlier this month, the Fort Smith-based festival this morning announced the locations for the creation of the public art. Alexis Diaz will work at Towson Avenue and D Street. He created a satellite mural in Fayetteville 2 years ago. It's the giant owl that looms over College Avenue from the side of the former Mountain Inn. Across from where Diaz will be working, the Fort Smith native Buffalo will be creating work on the Habitat for Humanity Restore building. The Jay's Appliance building will be the canvas for British graffiti artist Pref. Adjacent to Jay's Appliance building, the artist Ad Fuel from Portugal will be working with the entire 200 block of Towson Avenue. Anna Maria, who, like Alexis Diaz, is a native of Puerto Rico, is back for another edition of The Unexpected. She'll be creating art on the 800 block of Garrison Avenue. Chicago artist Cody Hudson will be completing a wrap of the abandoned Tankersley Brothers warehouse directly across from the newly restored Masonic Temple on Grand Avenue and North B. Fort Smith High School students will work on a mural at North 3rd and A. The students coming from both North Side and South Side to work together. And there will be a pop-up gallery space at the Bastion Gallery on Garrison Avenue featuring art created by Tulsa artist Yatika Star Fields. The Unexpected officially begins October 22nd and runs through the 28th. October 26th and 27th will include the Unexpected Outlier series of music and talk. One of the bands scheduled to perform during those 2 days is named The Outliers. And on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large, we'll hear The Outliers perform in the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
The band doesn't say no more, just showed up for work. The place on fire, got it straight from the clerk. A tenor sax is burning, people pass out from the heat.
Keith Grimwood, Ezra Eidlett, J.T. Huff, and Mike Sumler will play for us tomorrow at noon and 7 on a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. Then later this month on the show, we'll talk with writer Keith O'Brien about his book, Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. One of those five women covered in the book is Louise Thaden, Bentonville native and the namesake of the Bentonville Airport. Saturday at the airport is Louise Thaden Day. It's organized by the 99's Arkansas chapter. The 99's, a group of aviators co-founded by Louise Thaden and other women aviators. In his book, Keith O'Brien writes about the 1929 cross-country aviation race Louise Thaden won.
It was called the National Women's Air Derby. And the women themselves, including Amelia Earhart and Louise Thaden, had lobbied for it. They had advocated for it, pushed for it. It was going to be a transcontinental race, just like the men flew during this time. The women were going to fly from Santa Monica to Cleveland, which was the home of the 1929 air races. But the men wanted the women to fly on their terms, on their rules. And they tried to impose some pretty absurd rules upon the women from the outset. The first rule was that they wanted the women to fly accompanied by a man. And the second was they didn't want them flying over the Rocky Mountains. The men believed the women didn't have the, quote, stamina to do that. They wanted the women to fly from, say, Omaha to Cleveland or Minneapolis to Cleveland. It's probably not a surprise that these rules did not sit well with Louise Thaden and Amelia Earhart and the others. And they vowed to boycott. They announced in June 1929 that if these rules stayed in place, they would boycott the first ever women's air race. And that put the air race organizers in a bad position. You could not hold a women's air race in 1929 without Amelia Earhart and Louise Thaden and Ruth Nichols and Ruth Elder. You couldn't do that. It would have been a farce. So they allowed the women to race, and they allowed them to go all the way from Santa Monica to Cleveland. But they did impose one rule upon the women. They forced the women to stop in 15 different places along the way and spend the night in 8 different towns along the way, essentially puddle jumping across the country. The women agreed to this because they knew it was their only chance, their only shot. But the rule sort of backfired on the men. You know, because they had to stop, mandatory stops in all these different towns for a week, newspapers across the country had been filled with dispatches of their adventures for days. And by the time they reached Cleveland, these female aviators were some of the most famous pilots in the country of any gender. Now, they were real stars, and more importantly, they had proven, you know, that women could compete.
Keith O'Brien's new book is Fly Girls: How 5 Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. We'll hear much more from him later this month on An Ozarks at Large. And Saturday is Louise Thaden Day at Louise Thaden Field, the Bentonville Municipal Airport, from 8 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. It is free, and you can find out more at the Facebook page for Louise Thaden Day.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. We appreciate you tuning in. The latest installment of the Skyline Report is out. Reporter Jeff De La Rosa has a story up on our website, and we'll discuss some of the key numbers from the residential and multifamily real estate markets. And the Northwest Arkansas Tech Summit is just a few weeks away. We'll check in with Meredith Lowry, who is a key organizer of the two-day event. And Fort Smith-based Zero Mountain is expanding one of its Arkansas facilities, and that means job growth. Those details are coming up a little later. Stick around for those stories after the break. You're listening to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-COMM.com.
Arvest Bank on Tuesday released the Skyline Reports on residential and multifamily real estate for Benton and Washington counties. The biannual reports are completed by researchers at the Center for Business and Economic Research in the Sam Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. Average home prices continued to rise and reached record highs in the first half of 2018 in Northwest Arkansas as construction costs increased and lot availability declined. Also, the vacancy rate of the Northwest Arkansas multifamily market fell to 3.9%. from 4.2% in the same period in 2017, as apartments were added and rents rose. University of Arkansas economist Mervin Jebaraj said affordable housing is still a big issue in the residential real estate market, as the increase in home prices significantly outpaces both wage growth and inflation. With our population expected to continue to grow at a rapid pace, Jebaraj said, we need to continue building new homes to meet demand, but there are far fewer lots on which to build. This is especially true within the larger cities in the region, where many people desire to live. There's more on the latest Skyline Report on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. The Northwest Arkansas Technology Summit will convene on Tuesday, October 23rd at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers, welcoming thousands of attendees for a full day of speakers, breakout sessions, and collaboration on the latest ideas at the intersection of business and technology. On Monday, October 22nd, there are two related events, also at the Hammond Center, the Women in Tech Conference, and, for the first time, a summit dedicated to all things in the medical technology field. Meredith Lowry, an attorney with Wright Lindsay Jennings in Rogers, is the chairwoman for the Women in Tech and MedTech events. She offered a preview recently in an interview with Roby Brock. Take a listen.
MedTech and Women in Tech will be running at the same time the day before what we consider the normal tech summit. Startup weekend starts October 20th and runs through the 21st.
23rd.
And then Women in Tech and MedTech's on the 22nd, okay. And then Tech Summit is on the 23rd.
So talk to me about the evolution. It's only in its fifth year, and it's grown from about 400 and a one-day event to 2,500 and now a four-day event. Why has this event generated so much momentum so quickly? This is a really big increase in opportunity for folks.
I think we have the community fully on board. We have representation for the committees and planning from Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, and we have them actively participating in the conference as well. We also have the Northwest Arkansas Council actively on board and promoting it. And so we have all these players within the community really wanting this to be a jewel for Northwest Arkansas.
What goes on at the event? What do people get out of it? I know there's a lot of great speakers there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good forums that are there. You can learn a lot from there. But is there networking? Are there deals being made here? What's happening?
There are deals being made, oddly enough. We have a lot of time built in for those interactions between sessions, during sessions. So one of my favorite stories is a woman that attended a couple years ago, sat through an IBM discussion on blockchain, and started realizing that this could really help farmers out in the fields. And so she worked with IBM. They kind of brokered a deal, and so she ended up launching an app that can help farmers.
So give me a highlight of some of the big name speakers that will be there, just some people that folks might recognize in tech or some folks that they need to recognize in tech.
Stephanie Lampkin is coming from Silicon Valley. She is one of the women to watch in technology. She has a degree from Stanford and a master's from, I think, MIT, and she's launching an app soon to remove bias from employment, hiring. So she's one to watch. She's one of our keynotes for Women in Tech. We also have a scientist from IBM that works in Watson in genomics. Her name's Zha Xu. And
I won't ask you to spell that.
Spelling's easier than the actual saying.
I got you.
But she is a powerhouse. I'm so excited to see her. We also have Tony Buettner coming in. He works with Blue Zones, and this is one of those things that UAMS has had to teach me. I did not know what a Blue Zone was when we started
this.
What is
a Blue Zone?
It's the areas in the world where people live longer lives and happier lives. So the Buettners went and toured the world and started looking at the things, the characteristics, the data that would make it where people are in a blue zone. And so now they're coming to speak and also be a part of the day to talk about how Arkansas could become a blue zone.
Well, let's talk about how people would maybe make the Tech Summit a blue zone for them. How does someone get involved in this in terms of participation?
Well, we do have tickets available. They're at nwatechsummit.com. You can also call the Bentonville Chamber and talk to Debbie Griffin, and she can find a way for you to be involved.
All right. And then lastly, I guess, just what do you hope this thing grows into? Where does it go? I don't want to get past this year because you haven't done it yet, but I mean, if you've got a startup weekend and you've got med tech and you've got women in technology and then you've got the general conference there, I mean, you do have to kind of see there's some things on the horizon.
We really want this to showcase Arkansas, not just Northwest Arkansas, Arkansas as a whole, and how there are great things happening in this state, and tech companies are can be prosperous here and grow.
Meredith Lowry is the chairwoman for the Women in Tech and MedTech events that are now associated events of the larger Northwest Arkansas Technology Summit. For more, visit nwatechsummit.com. And we will, of course, have reporting from that event in a couple of weeks at nwabusinessjournal.com. A quick note before we let you go from the manufacturing beat. Fort Smith-based Zero Mountain broke ground Tuesday for a $12.5 million expansion of its North Little Rock operation. When it's completed, that will mean about 22 new jobs. The cold storage and logistics company will add about 74,000 square feet to the existing 88,000 square foot building. That'll add 5.8 million cubic feet of storage space, bringing the total company storage to a little over 41 million cubic feet of combined blast freezing, shipping and receiving, and storage space. Zero Mountain has 375 employees in five facilities in Fort Smith, Johnson, Lowell, North Little Rock, and Russellville, and ships about 3 billion pounds of food each year. And that's all the time we have today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Time to prepare for the weekend, or at least 1 hour of the weekend. The KUAF Vinyl Hour is heard every Saturday evening at 5 on 91.3 KUAF. It's hosted and produced by Lee Wood, who just coincidentally happens to be in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
Hi.
Hello.
Should we talk about it?
The Vinyl Hour?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what, Kyle?
What?
It's actually the tape hour this week.
The, like, cassette tapes?
Cassette tape hour. So my guest is Kurt from Tape Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about Tape Dad?
I do, a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Tape Dad is a local tape label. There you go. That's it. And he puts out releases from local bands on cassette tape. And they make a good package. These are good-looking tapes. And so he was nice enough to actually bring a tape deck to the studio. I tried to find some, and really, honestly, I ended up getting, like, the things that people just hadn't quite thrown away yet.
Had made it to their local electronic recycling
right.
center.
I did that for them. But he brought a beautiful tape deck, and it sounds really nice. And we listened to a mixtape.
Okay, I love this because I used to make mixtapes all the time.
Yeah, me too.
Here's my one question.
Okay.
For him.
Yes.
This doesn't seem to be the most economically sound way to release music in 2018?
Well,
I mean, I would not be able to play these cassette tapes.
This is true. And that's a your problem.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't mean to be, I kind of mean to be snide. But what I'm, but economically on his end, actually, you know, tapes, cassette tapes have made a bit of a resurgence because bands that are touring, it's expensive to press vinyl, mm-hmm. and you can't really do it in small quantities. It gets more expensive the smaller the quantity.
Sure.
Plus, carrying those around with you when heavy. You're on tour, heavy, they're a bit problematic. Cassette tapes are like the perfect way to sell music merch for touring bands. And it's taken off a little bit. But they put a lot of time and effort and care into the way these look. I mean, they're just great looking packages. The tapes sometimes have a vintage feel to them, mm-hmm. Which is totally appropriate. Sometimes they're just outlandish and pink and, you know, turquoise and stuff. And the art is very well done.
Do they come in those plastic cases?
They certainly do.
Yeah, that I like.
Yes. And I will say this, and I don't think that I'm speaking out of turn. There's also a group of folks who are really enjoying cassette tapes that didn't enjoy them the first time around.
Oh.
So there's a demographic difference here. And so I think that there's a novelty to it for some folks.
Sure.
Whereas we, you know, I think about the case that I had where you open it up, you have to look through the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's great. So we listen to great live music and we geek out about the packaging. And I learned some things about where you buy blank tapes so that you can duplicate and just some things like that that are interesting.
All right. The KUAF Cassette Tape Hour, Saturday evening at 5 on 91.3 KUAF. Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Kyle.
Hi, I'm Rob Wells, host of The Jazz Scoop, which airs Saturday nights at 10 p.m. This is a new show on KUAF that features iconic jazz artists from Charlie Parker and Duke Ellington to Kenny Garrett and Maria Schneider. Along the way, I hope to tell a little story about jazz each week. I also plan to feature little discovered artists in Arkansas and beyond. So tune in at 10 o'clock Saturday nights to The Jazz Scoop.
A familiar voice will be in Arkansas next month. The United States Marshals Museum will host NPR Morning Edition co-host and author Steve Inskeep for a Rule of Law lecture in Little Rock, November 12th. As part of his remarks, he'll discuss the impact then and now on the Indian Removal Act of 1830. This is free. It's open to the public. It will take place at the University of Arkansas Little Rock's Jack Stevens Center, and it will begin November 12th at 6 p.m. Admission will be free to the Little Rock event, but an RSVP is required by November 9th. You can make that RSVP by searching for the Rule of Law at eventbrite.com. And before then, plenty going on throughout Northwest Arkansas as well. You can spend the day listening to music, enjoying food, and learning about the traditions of life in the Ozarks at the Ozark Folklife Festival. That takes place Saturday at Tyler Bend on the Buffalo National River. Everyone is invited. If you'd like to know more, bnrpartners.org. And the Red Bull Pump Track World Championship Finals. This is an international bicycle competition, a world championship. The finals are Saturday at the Runway Skills Park at the Jones Center campus in downtown Springdale. You can find out more at thejonescenter.net. A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Winslow. Contributors on today's show included Zuzanna Sitek, Antoinette Grajeda. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is produced by Talk Business and Politics and the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Thanks to Lee Wood from the KUAF Vinyl Hour for stopping by as well. Our show is mastered and put together by Timothy Dennis. I'm Kyle Kellums. You can find out much more about the show and listen to past editions of the show as well as past individual stories and interviews at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. Also there, links that will help you share stories and interviews with your friends and family through social media and email. Finally, if you've missed a show and you'd like to listen to us on your schedule, we're available as an absolutely free podcast through services like iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks so much for listening. Back tomorrow at noon.